this is a top to a, you know, what we use on stage, but it's very, very special because if you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board.
Oh.
11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes are going to be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly. What we do is, if we need that extra push over the cliff, you know what we do?
Put it up to 11.
11, exactly. One louder.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Welcome to Conversation Radio's Lean, Mean, and Green Show right here on The Horn. It's Foxed Up with John Fox, where we turn the conversation to conservation. Foxed Up is brought to you by B1 Louder Productions in Sydney, Australia, and CityNet, citynet.net. B1 Louder by ringing 877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 877-443-2366. Or use your free minutes by dialing direct 304-658-5453. Yeah. Host, the ranting, head-banging hippie, John Fox.
All right, everybody, welcome aboard Foxed Up here on the Head On Radio Network. And it's good to be back, kind of still working on getting back into gear here after having a long weekend. It's kind of, I don't know, don't quite feel like I'm back into the groove yet. But anyway, we've got stuff to do. I've been just kind of a bit of a... I have this new form of political junkie heroin, which is known as digital TV, that has 24-hour live feeds from the Senate and the House of Representatives. So it's like C-SPAN, except no cable. And it's just been really, really interesting to watch this dynamic go down between a government that had been in power for 11 and a half years, now in opposition, and this young Labor Party suddenly actually running government. And it's been nothing but dirty Triggsville. It's been insane, because it's kind of all they've got, the opposition. Kevin Rudd, you know, they do this preferred prime minister poll, and Rudd's sitting at, you know, 70%+, and the opposition leader, Dr. Nelson's at 9. I think it's an all-time low. And the guy just can't get anything right at the moment, or he does the right thing, and then his party room stabs him in the back. I mean, the knives have just been out. Something fierce. But I'll get in a little bit more of that in a minute, because there was a couple of interesting exchanges that have gone on down here. And like I said, this dynamic of these two parties suddenly being in the opposite position for the first time in a long time, it's not a smooth transition, especially for the opposition. They still want to talk like they're in government. It's really funny. So anyway, let's do the track of the day before we get into all that, Bob. And this is for no other reason than it seems to be the Demon song on constant replay in my head. And it's just a really fun Black Crowes tune called Could I Have Been So Blind? So roll it, Bob.
Oh, could I have been so blind?
I don't know. No particular reason, just it's been in my head. Anyway. So, yeah, it's been a really kind of interesting couple of weeks because the Parliament has first gone into session and there was all the big stuff with the apology, which was groovy. And so then it gets down to, like, business as usual. And it's a rather comical transition. And at the moment, the opposition party, all they can do is sling just crap and rehash old kind of dirty tactic stuff that's come back to bite them before. And running question time, which is just such a great thing to be able to watch as it's happening. You know, watch them, you know, turning it into a smart-ass kind of pop quiz on the new treasurer. There was a whole bizarre exchange with Swan, who didn't perform that well, but to put it in a nutshell, an opposition minister asked him basically a furphy of a question, asked him to state a theoretical number as a percentage regarding the economy. It was just this completely just furphy of a question, and it's like a debated theory. It's not even a real number. So they kind of hang him out to dry for not knowing this figure, which, regardless of what he said, you know, 500 different people have 500 different opinions on this thing. And they're just playing silly buggers. And and this kind of hapless leader of the opposition, who I don't think really is a horrible guy, but he's just gotten the worst job in politics in the Western world, which is to carry on after John Howard. And, you know, he'd be told by the party to, you know, on this work choices reforms that are going to be abolished, you know, not necessarily a mandate to do that. We're going to challenge you, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, when the whole election was about it. And, you know, 3 months later, they still don't get why they lost. It's hysterical. It's absolutely hysterical. And even though this new treasurer, Swan, didn't, you know, perform as well as anyone would have liked, being nice, I think, there were a few surprises. And yesterday, I saw this great exchange between the opposition minister, you know, shadow minister for the environment, asking Peter Garrett, former lead singer of Midnight Oil, and who in the run-up to the election was kind of like, you know, the dunce cap boy of the election run. He just kept saying the wrong thing at the wrong place, being made to look a bit of a twit, and then caving on a major environmental issue that did him a lot of damage. But they threw up one of these furphy questions at him, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, this could be interesting. Let's see how he's doing now. So he throws this furphy of a question saying, can he guarantee that Labor's environmental policies won't put a strain on gas prices? And it's just like, you're connecting what to what? And wanting a simplistic answer like that. And they also waved around the only environmental thing that they did, the last government, the whole time that they were in office, which was pay Indonesia and a couple of other countries, I believe, to not clear fell some rainforest, which is cool. But that's like all they did. So they pull this thing out in question time and say, well, why haven't you mentioned anything about this, you know, the only thing we ever did? And thankfully, Peter Garrett didn't bite, didn't fall for it. It was awesome. And he charges the podium like he used to charge a microphone stand in an RSL. It was fantastic. You know, veins popping out of his head the whole bit. I mean, he was on fire. And he hops up, and he was so much on fire that the Speaker of the House, who kind of runs the show, told him to step back and sit down, and that, you know, he shouldn't necessarily take the opportunity to grandstand. He. And he comes back and just hammers about 11 years of doing nothing, and how dare you hold this one thing up that you did and try and make that one thing the entire yardstick. How dare you? And I mean, he was pissed off, to say the least. And it was good. It was like to see, you know, the idealists who looked to him when he entered politics as possibly a vehicle for some of the anger at the short-sightedness and the stupidity of modern society. And to come out absolutely just eight cylinders. Maybe a little too much. It was really funny. And so I'm hoping that this is going to be like a sign of things to come. But still, all this, and I'm finding it really interesting. I haven't seen such a thing in a long time up close, to see an opposition party, so long in opposition, suddenly get into government. And I reckon, you know, it's not a hard stretch to believe this, but I think the John Howard's coalition is adapting to the change in the balance of power a bit slower than Labour. And they've also been, so far, just kind of ticking things off the list of bits of business that they said that they were going to do, you know. Signed Kyoto, said sorry. Two big ones right off the bat. They're working on the economic plan. You can't expect that kind of stuff in 3 months, I don't think. I think we're still kind of living on the dealings of the previous government for another couple of months yet, but then things will change. And that's the other thing that the new opposition, oh, it's so funny to say that, the new opposition, have basically two cards. They have we got to teach you young kids how things are run thing going on. And it's very, very snipey. It's very, very childish. It's very, very funny. And there's there's a bit of, you know, they still don't get why they were booted. There was this great Four Corners program this weekend called Howard's End, where they had all of, you know, his deputy and all the party insiders just opened up and let out the knives. But even after an hour, you could see that these people did not understand why they lost power. And, you know, we were talking before on the horn section, the dynasty thing, and that's that, you know, I don't like people being in power for so long. It's usually not good for democracy. And I keep waiting. Is anybody else still waiting for the other shoe to drop with Pakistan? Is it just me? You know, they're saying that there was this huge turnout and huge emphatic kind of victory for the opposition parties, which I think is probably a good thing. But that was supposed to be tied up and fixed beyond recognition, I thought. I thought he was a shoe-in over there. But that took me by surprise. So I keep, you know, Gail and I were talking about last night, kind of still waiting for the other shoe to drop. when does the manipulation come? And I know there was quite a bit of violence over there. That is the hot spot, isn't it? Officially. 'Tis the hot spot. And yet, we're still in this stupid thing in Iraq. Why? Why are we still there? I mean, I know why. But I don't know why. Hasn't it become utterly obvious that it's going to be ugly no matter what happens, and the best of all options is the sooner we get out, the less damaging it's going to be? And it's all... it all kind of, you know, tinkers on that. Anyway, where was I going to go? I did have a couple of things here. Let me see if I can find them. Whoops. No, don't close the browser, John. Ah! I lost it. Okay. Hey, Bob, why don't we play some music while I get my stories back? Hey, that's a really good idea, John. browser death. Oh, no. So stick around, everybody. You're listening to Fucked Up here on the Head On Radio Network, and it's one of them nights. So stick around. Such a great song. Screaming Jets there. So, you know, if you got anything you want to talk about, please feel free to ring in 1-877-443-2366. because it's really, there's no plan at the moment. But we're starting to get a bit more of an idea, though, of what this new government we got here is going to be like. And just due to the early chit-chat, the environment really looks like it's going to take a serious step up. There will actually be budgeted money for projects to help the environment. Something new. Actually trying to take some action. And starting to see a bit of a plan, because they've set on some carbon reduction targets, which is the first step, you know, just like, you know, the whole apology thing, you know. To actually get somewhere, you got to start moving at some point. And so having an idea of where you're trying to get to, even though those goalposts could move and probably will, you have to have somewhere to start. So it's looking like we're going to see a little bit more of, I don't know, taken seriously as an actual issue for government. And it's going to be interesting, to say the least. And there's this piece, actually, over at Celsius, seeking a sustainable future for Australia. And Ian Lowe, president of the Australian Conservation Foundation, and emeritus professor of science, technology, and society at Griffith University. I hope that this guy ends up being part of, they're going to have a public think tank kind of thing, where anyone who wants to come and get 5 minutes to make a pitch for an idea of what a future government should do. I hope that this guy's involved. I bet he is. But he says here, the warnings from scientists are clear. We're using resources future generations will need in damaging environment systems. If civilization is to survive, we don't need new technology. We also need, we don't just need new technology. We also need a new approach to the natural world. And I think he makes a really good point. The whole dynamic's got to shift. And then it'll become much easier. It won't seem so bad. The goalposts will shift a little bit, but it's not going to make it any more hard. It's just going to be slightly different. And before we go on with that, we'll go to the phones. Michelle, gal from Cal, is on the line. How are you, Michelle?
Hey. You're up during my time.
Well, it's only late in the afternoon
time
here.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's cool. I called because I wanted to talk to you about your government, you know, over there in Australia, and how green I was with envy hearing about you talk. I mean, not that you're not going to have to deal with the malarkey, you know, the radical conservatives and the self-serving.
Oh, yeah.
But, oh, my gosh, what a, you know, something I have to tell you, this past, after 2006, I really just couldn't put myself into the political, you know, volunteerism. I mean, I did more of the peace marching and war protests. I just couldn't.
I cannot understand that.
The last thing I did was, I was a poll inspector. I mean, I ran an election poll in Stanton, California, and it was so depressing. So to hear what's going on, you know, just the hope, you know, for just
well,
the fact that,
yeah,
you know, your government,
I know,
we're taking the troops out. I mean, I'm just so damn impressed.
Well, but yet we'll probably increase our commitment to Afghanistan, because Rudd does think that there is something to deal with there, but Iraq is a completely different story. So, you know, I mean...
Isn't that blowback? I mean, you know, what's going on in Afghanistan or Pakistan? Is it Pakistan?
Oh, Pakistan's wild. Like I said, I keep waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Yeah.
I still don't quite believe it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I can't believe they killed... what's her name? You know, I'm terrible.
Benazir Bhutto.
I don't mean to disrespect her. You know, I'm just terrible with names. Luckily, you guys have easy names, Bob, John, you know. I can see that. I mean, I understand that. I hope that will give some relief in the sense of those countries that we've so well offended. I don't know, though. Australia's kind of been right in there with us, you know. That's what...
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that came to bite Howard in the ass was his blind commitment to the alliance with the United States when the attitude of the Australians, I think, started to come to the vibe of, wait a minute, this isn't what we thought it was supposed to be. And, you know...
and there are no weapons
friend,
of mass destruction.
Yeah, and if you're truly a friend, do you try and tell that other friend to not go jumping off the bridge? isn't that a much better way to go?
Yeah.
And I think that's... I hope that these things kind of are what comes out of Rudd as they get further down the line. I think the foreign minister that we've got, I can't remember his name at the moment, I can be bad at names as well, is going to be quite good. It's really nice to see the shakeup, because that's one of the things that I dig about the system here, is that you can, suddenly at a moment's notice, the whole thing gets rattled. And I think that's good.
Oh, no, I agree.
You know?
I agree. That is what's... You know, when you all were talking and Bob was talking about with Obama and Clinton, what's sad for me is I'm like, okay, well, should I support? Well, you know, and then I think, you know, what's the point? I'm at that because it's like you don't know who to trust. I mean, I saw how she voted these last. What, 8 years she's been in office now, almost? I mean...
And the thing that I didn't get to...
he's done, and he hasn't done much better. It's all kind of what protects their cushy little, you know, where they're at, how they float on the cloud kind of position.
It's amazing, but unfortunately, you know, the system has now gotten it to the point where we've been dealt these final two.
Yeah.
And so you still have to have that decision with yourself, no matter how broken the system is. You still...
Exactly. Oh, no.
You still need to make that decision, and it still needs to carry the same weight that it used to personally. What we need to fix is having it carry weight in the system.
I understand what you're saying.
This whole super delegate crap is just, to me, I don't like, I thought we were past backroom cigar-smoking political decisions. I thought our system was supposed to be above that.
Yeah. Well,
The thing that I wonder, and I've been hearing from a couple of the more comedic commentators, is, you know, it's okay. We know what we've got with Hillary,
mm-hmm.
and the thing that Obama has got, and I don't know if he has it to back, has what it takes to back it up. And I would think that in the situation, I think he actually would have what it takes to back it up, but that there might be, at least this is the image that's being put out, there is something yet to be discovered under there than under the Clinton thing. And I wonder how much of that really is playing.
Yeah. Well, I think I think with the two candidates, I think with Obama, what you're seeing is truly, and just my involvement in the political since 2004, 2006, and in between all that, the young people were voting, but you kept hearing them say, I don't know why we keep voting. You know, nothing's happening that we vote for. It's so true. I mean, they
absolutely.
You know, their school, you know, no, that didn't pass. But, you know, lowering the rate at school, college costs, loan costs, you know, things that affect the young people. You know, maybe a tax break for young couples. You know, these weren't coming forth. And
well,
then
yeah,
he came along.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's come along, and he's played I've been watching him play this, you know, internet, kind of wasn't too serious. You don't want to be too serious. And like you said earlier, his speeches, well, Bob was saying, one of you guys were talking about his speeches. I mean, come on, what he's plugging is things that you heard in high school and in college. So these are recognizable to young people because really, what do they have in their generation that, I mean, I barely remember the 60s, you know. What do they have that was a movement? But what they want.
They've had nothing.
Right. So
they've had nothing.
So he's hitting these, I mean, oratorically, he's hitting movements in their mind, you know, these great movements in the 60s and Martin Luther King and, you know, unions. And so those speeches do trigger something, but not too extreme because they can't handle that, you know. Then they can't go and party the night after they get through campaign.
Well,
anyway.
You know, and this is why I think actually he scares the pants off the Republicans more than Hillary.
I think you're right. I think
because there's something that crosses party lines with that, and I, like I said, we don't have the substance quite yet, but you know, sometimes it does come down to the people taking, you know, as I say here, taking a punt. And I think that there is some gravity towards taking the punt than taking the safe play, because has failed.
I'm thinking, okay, what is it? Because the media likes it, okay?
Yeah.
The media likes it. And that's what scares me. Because, you know, I mean, since you've got an M, you probably talk to him every day, Rupert Murdoch, right?
Oh, yeah, my buddy.
I mean, the whole media control over here is just, I don't know. I mean, they love this whole drama. I don't even like watching it. I just read mostly what I can about the candidates on the trail, but listen to you.
Well, I don't think it should be an advertising exercise for the networks. I think you know, a much shorter system for doing these primaries, and at a much more national level.
Oh my
And
God.
You know. Screw the networks. It's just, it's a joke.
Yeah, they're making millions. I mean, this is a whole industry in itself. It's just disgusting.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I want to see removed from it. I think it should be less of an industry and more of a process.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, you're talking, what are you, hey,
there's me talking out of my ass again.
You're talking, yeah, I can't win. When flying monkeys come out of your butt, John. Well,
you know.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I'm just, you know.
Something about Rupert Murdoch, you know.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, okay. What do you think about him thinking about buying the Yahoo? Hello?
Sorry, I lost you there for a second.
Oh, that's all right. Did you hear my question?
No, not at all. Just when you started it, it went dead for a minute, and then it came back, I guess, just after you were done. So, yeah, it got completely lost into the black hole on my end. That was weird.
As soon as I mentioned Rupert, you know, something about I heard him interested in buying Yahoo.
Yeah. After the Microsoft deal got nixed, seems to be the next thing that's being talked about. And I don't know too much detail. I don't know how hot that has gotten. It would
that really concerns
be interesting because it would really have a massive effect if Rupert bought it. As far as the cross branding, there would be quite a few issues there. Because MSN, you have the MSN brand with so many news, web, TV, cross-marketing things. We've got a Yahoo 7 thing, you know, similar tie-ins, and they're all over the world. And so there you're going to have, suddenly Rupert's going to own that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's something we should keep an eye on. You know, if the Congress should threaten to step in on something like this, like they did with the Microsoft, don't you think it would be the same with Rupert? You know, I mean,
I think just good business terms first is just what I'm thinking. I think there are licensing deals tied in with Yahoo that are so extensive that I think it would be a logistical nightmare for someone like Murdoch to buy it. Microsoft would have been a little less of a technical headache, I'd think. But Rupert's a totally different thing. It would be direct competition, buying direct competition of news.com.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it totally confused me when I heard that. I was just like... And to top it off, I happened to watch National Geographic, and they have this special on North Korea. And, oh, my gosh, when you guys were talking about when you were playing that Christian radical lady talking about Obama, right? You should have seen the North Korean people that were, a doctor went in, volunteered to go in and operate on 1,000 people that couldn't see, that were blind. And when they took their bandage off, realized they could see at the end, I'm doing this very quickly, all they could do is praise their leader. And it was, oh my gosh. And then they showed this prison camp, you know, from the air, from satellite, and this guard had escaped out of North Korea and was telling them about the camp, and that camp was just for the family of people that had spoke against the government, and the children and people just die there. You know, they just are starving. The man saw children digging through cow crap to get the corn, and they'd take it and wash it and eat it. Now, that is what we need to be concerned about. I mean, it's just, you know, that kind of strife, that kind of sorrow going on in our society, you know, and I think about that. And I think about, you know, Rupert Murdoch and China, how the Yahoo has worked with China to keep them limited on their communication. And then I think about these people.
Murdoch's a crazy character, you know. I mean, went to China to, you know, make a fortune and found a wife and bowed down to the Chinese government. And then just from something that we noticed, I don't know if you're familiar with a BBC show called Torchwood.
Yeah.
And, right. Well, it was on at variously randomizing days of the week and late hours, but it was at least being played. And all of a sudden, and then it just disappeared, right?
Uh-huh.
I couldn't figure out why. I'm going, it couldn't be, with the way Doctor Who rates down here, it couldn't be that it wasn't rating. I just don't believe it for a second. And so I actually found one of those sites that has, you know, nice copies of such shows available for streaming.
Yeah.
And I kind of think I found the episode that would have occurred or been played when it disappeared. And it was, after 2 o'clock in the morning on Murdoch's channel here, it turns into the Christian channel.
Yeah.
And I think it was that first episode where Harkness goes after the other guy for the first time on camera. Gail says, I think it's just a little too homoerotic for Mr. Rupert Murdoch. And I said, I think you're right.
I don't understand. I don't understand the greed. I guess that's why I like hanging with you all. you're not greedy people. You're not self-consumed. You're truly part of the motions of the ocean. You know? I don't know.
Wow. we just try and do what we do here, you know. I mean, we've got no, you know, there's...
Yeah, exactly. You've got
nobody stars here. That's not the point of doing this. So I think that unless you're doing it honestly, you don't stand a chance. And I think that's one of the problems that radio faces is too much of this micromanagement from the big networks. Even something like Clear Channel could work if they actually let the local affiliates do their do some programming and allow them to do. They could actually be bigger money makers than they are now and create some really great content.
You've only got what you've got in the major markets right now. It's out here, you know, in California, what we've got. Sports Channel, a couple of channels where you've got hosts that are, you know, telling jokes and cutting each other down. A couple of those. Maybe one.
Yeah. It's all the formula.
Yeah. It's just, and they lose them. They lose, heck. Even the radio shows, John, with the music are now formula.
And it's all like local brand.
Oh, it's ridiculous. There's no human element anymore.
Absolutely. It's become just, you know, a totally formulaic kind of thing. And they know that they can sell the units of advertising and they install the system. I actually got someone else hanging on the line, though, so it's been really good to talk to you, Michelle.
Oh, good.
And,
John, we'll talk again. Take care.
All right, take care. And Richard from the Bay Area, would that be like the Bay Area, California, Richard? Welcome to the show.
Oh, yes, that's the right day. Hi, John. Congratulations about getting rid of Howard.
It's still sinking in, honestly. You know, I still kind of myself go, oh, yeah, they are the government.
I know what you mean. It's there are these parallels between Australia and the United States that are pretty scary, I think.
Well, yeah, and I think... Yeah, oh, I definitely think, and for the first time in a long time, Australia actually hit a possible turning point before the United States did. Usually Australia would be, you know, a couple years behind. But this time we're actually kind of on the cusp of it.
From what I can see from the news, you know, from the news reports that I get, in a way, your government in Australia is worse, you know? In a sense, they're more entrenched. They're, you know, more horrible bills went through your government.
Oh, well, yeah, they're... this whole work industrial relations thing that was pushed through
exactly.
without ever having been mentioned was just really draconian. And
and overtly draconian. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. It was referred
it was
really to as,
visible,
like, surf.
And that was very scary. But actually, I called you about something else, which has to do with environment. And I know that that's something you're really interested in, naturally. You brought something up on your program, must have been a couple of weeks ago, that really struck me, which is the subject of small-scale energy generation. You remember that?
Yeah. You know, absolutely. I've mentioned it more than once that, you know, there's a little bit of a paradigm shift in thinking when it comes to dealing with things like, you know, wind and solar and whatnot.
Yeah.
is this idea of not so much this central generation and distribution,
exactly.
but actually interconnectivity of smaller networks. And
so
I think that
look at
that,
this. We have a very exciting opportunity ahead, and you know, it's like I look at these little niches, and that's really exciting. When I've lived in New England, and you go through New England and you come across these mill ponds, you know, outside abandoned factories, and they're still there.
Yeah.
You see, so we have the makings of small-scale hydro in various
places. Yeah. And that whole geothermal, solar geothermal closed system, you know, sometimes referred to as the SPEGS system, I think is crucial as well. And that can actually create large-scale generation, 24/7 baseload power at after construction's complete, zero emissions. And, I mean, there's already plants running 7 million households on these plants.
And where I missed part of this. What type of plants are these?
They're called solar geothermal. There's been some press about one in Spain. There's actually one in California. They're starting to build one in Victoria. And it's basically a set of reflectors that reflect up onto a big tower, and the tower has amorphous ammonia, I believe it is, in it. And this focused power just goes up and heats this liquid, and it runs standard everyday turbines, just like
we do. Oh, my God, that's old as hell.
What's really cool is that the excess pressure that doesn't actually get consumed will go and get stored in either tanks or below ground, but mostly, and people are more come into the thinking that it's much safer to do tanks. So you always have loss. So the loss is all captured, and when the system goes down, the system reverses and goes off the tanks. And they have modeled this thing that it doesn't necessarily have to just be a day night cycle. It can be a seasonal cycle, as long as you have the storage. So
yeah,
it could be used
as
poles.
I seem to recall reading about this something like 30 years ago, but it didn't have that second part. It didn't have the
storage. If you Google just SHPEGS, you should come up to a website that actually has a really good little flash thing. It's on a show post on my blog on the network site. As well, you can probably search there and search for SPEGS, and you'll see this whole kind of animation thing that shows you really the basics how the system works, and it's actually being done open source. So it's thought of that there's no royalties to the technology, and if you add something to the technology, they ask you to add it to the documentation.
Wow.
So
I like that. What did you say?
SHPEGS.
Cool.
SPEGS, I think. Solar powered something.
Yeah.
Geothermal something.
Let me get back to what I brought up. You know, I was in Montana up by the Canadian border, and again, you know, it's like I passed this pond, a dam, It was small, and it was partially broken down. There had been a power company on that probably 50 years ago, 60 years ago, and it was abandoned, you know, because the large-scale people just came in and said, we don't need this anymore, and it's too labor-intensive.
You're too far from our next junction point, and there'll be too much loss, as opposed to
going and
putting a relay point in.
How many households could be powered by that thing if it were just patched up again?
I think quite a few, but I think the more important thing is to start putting this in the overall plan of things from here on out. So when you build a new home, you are going to have, you know, solar roof tiles on your house, and mm-hmm. you will be hooked up to the grid. And you start building this into the code system. They did it with insulations and whatnot, and it ended up being because it saved money nationally and waste of energy. So, you know, the way local codes brought in this kind of stuff, I think we'll have to bring in stuff like, you know, water tanks, solar water heaters, things like that, you know, and mm-hmm. then you have a gas backup. And so as opposed to first working on trying to fix all the older communities, at least build out now, thinking about this generation stuff, and that will lead to making interfacing, you know, the older communities into the new grid. And there are benefits, too, like just the simple fact of having electric vehicles charging overnight, mm-hmm. because of the fact that you can't store electricity, it would be healthier for the grid actually having all this juice being taken on overnight instead of just generating for nothing except for expectant supply or demand. And the studies have shown that the grid as it is could handle America turning to completely over to electric vehicles virtually overnight.
I'm trying to take that in.
Yeah, it's actually so feasible. And so, you know, because they have to generate 24/7,
yeah,
for obvious
right.
reasons. But the actual having all these vehicles on the grid when actually feeding off is better for the grid than it just pumping and having no load on.
So you're running the grid at a better capacity ratio overnight.
Absolutely. So it's all this unused capacity, and it would actually be better for the grid and its health in the long run if you actually had all these vehicles charging over the night in the United States.
Got it.
So I think it's such a very doable thing, and when you just change that one little switch in your head about the micro generation feeding the greater, there's less of the dealings with loss, because that's just unexpected. But if everything's connected, the loss is going to end up being less as you develop.
Oh, I see.
It's pretty.
If you're feeding onto the grid instead of from a central point, from a bunch of more localized points, you'll have less loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You know, you won't have, you know, you will have little sections that go down, but then they'll have many close other connections for the most part, you would think, where they would be able to divert some to keep those folks going while their stuff's being dealt with, and then when they're back up, they continue to feed into the grid. And
I
the beautiful thing with electricity is that, you know, the math is pretty clear, and you can actually set up a goal and figure out what needs to be done to achieve that goal pretty clearly most of the time. So I don't see that it's an issue other than having the strength to actually invest in the infrastructure. That's the thing.
Wow.
And that would be good for jobs as well.
Oh, yes.
And every good economist, you know will tell you that money invested by the government into infrastructure does more for jobs and the overall economy than giving it in the form of tax breaks to corporations and rich people.
Oh, yeah. That goes without saying to me. What I'm thinking, too, is that there may be more infrastructure out there already than we realized.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Absolutely.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Hey, man, I tell you what, we should talk about this again further another time. We're just about running out of time. I lost sign of the clock. Good to talk to you, man. Thanks, Richard. And check out the Schpeg stuff, and maybe we can even dig that up, and we'll repost it on tomorrow's show post. So thanks to Bob Kincaid for producing today. Thanks to having callers today. That was fun. And thanks to Cole River Mountain Watch and B1 Ladder Productions for their support of this program. And as we say here on Foxed Up, be good, be green. We'll see you tomorrow.
Now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Last week, there was a major battle between Congress and the administration, and the mainstream media hardly noticed.